Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of Medical Women Talking. I'm Jane Dacre, and in this season, I wanted to speak to more wonderful and inspiring medical women, including people who are early and mid-career. These women are all making a name for themselves in their respective fields. They're what I like to call rising stars and will be influencing all our futures.
Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Ruth Law. Ruth is a consultant in medicine and care of the elderly, and she works in London. So, Ruth, thank you very much for chatting to me today. So, tell me about your career so far.
So, as you said, I'm currently a consultant working in the Whittington Hospital in North London. I've been a consultant for 7 or 8 years, and prior to that, I had a fairly standard training through SHO and registrar training in London. But towards the end of my registrar training, I went on a leadership course called Prepare to Lead, which was run by NHS London, where I had the opportunity to have some training outside of my normal training programme. So this was with registrars from different specialties, the opportunity to be mentored by a chief executive from another hospital and to attend really high quality leadership training with action learning sets and fantastic talks from inspirational leaders. And that was the first time I'd really put myself forward for that type of training. The first time I'd ever really done something outside of my training programme. And it really got me interested in leadership and management, and also helped me understand, I think, better the sort of value and currency that a doctor has as a professional, which I think when you're in training, you're so focused on completing your ARCP, you sort of lose sight of maybe what your skills are as an individual and what your value might be to the healthcare landscape as a whole, not just the hospital you're working in. So that was really transformative for me and got me quite excited about becoming a consultant. I think I should say prior to that, at the end of my SHO training, I was caught up in a rearrangement of training called MTAS, which I found really dispiriting, and ended up doing an extra year that I hadn't planned. But I think as I look back, I realised that it was almost because of that that I ended up doing this leadership training. And I think that was my first lesson that often in retrospect, things happen for a reason, but you have to sort of keep moving forward until you realise that's what's happened.
So seeing a disaster made you think, oh, my goodness, somebody ought to be doing this a bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I sort of had this moment where I thought, well, I can keep feeling really bitter about this, or I can move forward and actually find a way to work out how things can be better. How do you get into a position where you can influence these types of problems and influence decision making? So it was a very baby step really at that point, but it's definitely shaped where I've gone since then. And it meant when I started as a consultant, I felt I had a set of skills that was something extra to what I've just got from my sort of standard specialty training.
So, taking you back a bit before then, did you decide that you wanted to be a doctor very early on, or did it take a while?
I haven't really got an amazing conversion to medicine story. I was just one of those people that liked science and also liked people and gave that answer at my medical school interview like everyone does. And I would say I feel really lucky looking back that I chose medicine because I absolutely love it as a career. And I feel really fortunate that, you know, at the age of 16 or 17, I managed to get myself on this pathway. I wouldn't say I really thrived in preclinical years, but as I started to do more patient contact type work, I really kind of got in my groove with medicine and started to really, really enjoy it. And even now today, the thing that it gives me the most energy in my day is the patient interaction. And as I said, I trained mainly in London, and then I got to the point in my training where I had to choose a specialty. I thought back to the different specialties I'd worked in during my time, and actually my very first job as a house officer was in geriatric medicine, and I worked with some really inspiring clinicians who I've ended up coming back to work with as a consultant, which has been a fantastic experience. But I also, if I'm honest, thought about the patients I most enjoy seeing. when I was on call, and it was the elderly. And so few of my colleagues could say that. I thought, I think I'm meant to be a geriatrician. And I've never looked back, really. I love the mix of sort of MDT working, holistic care. And again, it feels quite serendipitous, but really, I think the specialty of geriatrics has really developed and taken off in the last decade. You know, there is a growing understanding that the ageing population is one of the biggest challenges. Well, it's one of the biggest successes of the NHS, but it's one of the biggest challenges facing us in the next sort of 10 to 20 years. And so with the combination of interest in leadership and service development and being a geriatrician, I think, you know, it stood me in really good stead in my early consultant years.
But it's all quite complicated at the moment, and quite a number of people are feeling fed up, burnt out, as if they really is being asked, too much is being asked for them in health. Do you ever feel like that?
I think it's only human to feel like that sometimes. I am by nature quite an optimistic person. So it takes quite a lot for me to feel really fed up and like I don't want to come to work. And I honestly can say that has happened very rarely. I do think a lot's being asked of healthcare professionals at the moment, but I don't think we're the only profession that's under a lot of strain. I think globally and within our, you know, society at the moment, there's a lot of things that aren't going very well. Yeah. And health is one of those. So that's the one we have to deal with every day. But I sort of go back really when I'm having a bad day to what I mentioned earlier, which is when I spend time with patients and I get to use my training and you have that really good medical interaction where the communication goes well, the diagnostics go really well, it's interesting, the team works well together. I still say there's no better job in the world really than those days when that all goes to plan. And those days still happen reasonably regularly.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is colleagues, you know, investing in your colleagues, investing in your team. They're the people who really sort of keep you going when you're having a bad day. And you'd be pretty unlucky if you're all having a bad day at the same time. So I'm fortunate I work with a really great team. And it was always said to me through training, you know, when you're looking for a consultant job, think about who your colleagues are going to be. And I definitely am glad I heeded that advice.
Yeah. So you've talked about clinical work, but you're also now getting involved in putting your head above the parapet as a leader in medicine. So how do you balance the two out? And what are the relative strengths and weaknesses of your enjoyment of each?
Okay, so I have a couple of roles outside my sort of clinical job at my trust, which are leadership type roles. So I do some work with the British Geriatric Society. So that's my specialty society. And the role I have there is honorary secretary, where I'm really involved in policy, communications and strategy. And that also involves obviously working for an external organisation or a charity, so being a trustee as well. And the other organisation I work with is Royal College of Physicians, where I'm currently a censor, which is a sort of educational, regulatory and ceremonial role. So those things, I guess the first challenge is balancing time. And that requires being very organised. I work less than full-time in my clinical job, so I have a little bit of flexibility to do things outside of my day job, and I have more flexibility to organise my time. But I've also found that within reasonable limits, doing other things outside of the NHS, actually I find very energising. And although I may be busy, I find that those roles really give back more to me than they take away in terms of time. And I think, so it's just having that place outside of work where you can go. And the same feeling I felt when I did my very first leadership course, that I was adding value with the skills I've learned as a doctor to another organisation, is a really great feeling. And that's something that I think gives back to you and builds you up as a professional.
Difficult bits?
Difficult bits.
Maybe there aren't any.
I don't know. I said I'm quite a positive and optimistic person. I'm trying to think of, I mean, there are challenges. I think there are challenges to wearing lots of hats. So you just have to be really careful about conflicts of interest and, you know, making sure that when you're having a conversation with someone, they know the capacity in which you're having it, really. And I have that within my NHS job as well. So I have leadership roles within my hospital. And I think it's really, really important if you're chatting to a colleague that they know whether you're just chatting over coffee as a peer or whether you're actually talking to them in a more formal capacity. And those lines can get blurred quite unhelpfully sometimes. So I try and be really clear about that. I think I find probably the biggest challenges as I've taken on more senior leadership roles are probably around managing conflict, times when I need to be more assertive. I found that difficult within my sort of personality type. And I think because I've always sort of championed a very collaborative, compassionate style of leadership, what I found particularly during the pandemic is that can be quite personally costly if you're always the person that has to be saying, come on, we can get through this, everyone stick together. You need to work out how you're going to refuel yourself. And actually, there were definitely points during the last 2 or 3 years where it was very, very difficult to do that and actually not possible. And that, and again, I think that's when you fall back on your team and say, actually, I can't manage the situation anymore. How are we going to get through this? I think natural leadership style, but I've learned that you have to set some limitations around leading in that way. You can't do it indefinitely. I know COVID was an extreme situation, but I think it's a good lesson in general.
About supporting each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And about having boundaries. Is that what you're...
I think so. I mean, I just think it just struck me, you know, I think we all know how to generate a good team atmosphere, don't we? You need to spend time with your team. You need to get to know them well on a personal level. And there's just practical things you might want to do, whether it's, you know, going out after work or being the person that is remembering to nominate people for Star Awards or, you know, even just writing emails of thanks to people. You have to make time to do that. And no one has a limitless support. A limitless amount of time and energy, so that you do have to have some boundaries and priorities around how you manage that. Yeah, I think you're right about boundaries.
So who's given you your inspiration, or how have you got your inspiration to carry on under difficult circumstances?
I think, I feel really lucky that people have... Well, they've not just put the ladder down for me, they sort of dragged me up the ladder. really sort of encouraged me to put myself forward for things and not wait till I feel totally ready to do something. I think that's really key. I probably had a tendency to wait till I feel completely qualified to apply for something or put myself forward, whereas now I'm much more happy to give things a go when opportunities come up. And I think that's what I've learned at this stage of my career now is, you know, opportunities just spring out of nowhere and you have to be ready to just jump on them and give it a go. And there's sometimes, in fact, I think you might have said this to me, they feel like quite big leapfrogs forward. It's not linear progression at all. You just suddenly something comes up and kind of boing, you suddenly move forward 6 spaces.
A way that I think it's Leslie Regan, who's the ambassador for women's health. A great quote from her is that opportunities don't make appointments.
That is a very good quote. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other picture I got from one of my leadership courses was this idea of a tree instead of a ladder, actually, where you're not just going straight up. You might have to explore some branches on the way up. And I feel much happier now to have a go at something and actually be honest with myself. It's not for me, or it's not the right thing at this time to come back and try something else, which I think when you're starting off is really hard because you don't really want to say no to anything. I use a completely different set of criteria now to decide whether I want to do something than I would have done at the start.
But you look to me like the sort of person that would enjoy everything. Is there something that you've done that you've really thought, no, do you know what, this is not my cup of tea?
I do enjoy everything because I try and just get the most out of each opportunity. The big one I had to stop doing was when I was a training programme director before Foundation Year 2. And luckily for me, my second year of doing that, which is when I sort of felt like I was starting to know what I was doing, was at the start of the sort of COVID pandemic, and it involved organising a lot of redeployment, which I found really challenging because you have to take quite a helicopter view to do the best for the system. But some individuals were really upset by that process, and I found that incredibly challenging, because you have to make the decision that you think is right at that moment. But I couldn't manage that and manage leading the sort of medical clinical side of things in COVID. And I had to let that go. And I felt sad because I just learned how to do it. And I did enjoy the trainee interaction. But looking back, I'd spread myself too thinly, I think. And it wasn't really developing me as a person. It was causing quite a lot of stress. I mean, I had the ability to do the job, but I didn't. You don't have to keep doing things just because you can. I think that's what I learned.
And I think we tend to take on more and more and more, yeah, and more, and it's hard to lose things sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So can I, if you don't mind, talk a little bit about your family life?
Yeah, sure.
So tell me about your background and life at home. I mean, it will be mainly women that are listening to this podcast, and I don't think we talk enough about how we keep body and soul together.
So I said I'm less than full time. So I work 4 days a week, and I've done that ever since I was a consultant. I'm married. I've got two children who are currently 10 and 7. So most of my time as a consultant up till now, I've been juggling sleepless nights and the sort of coordination of childcare and all the different things that come with family life, whether that be making nativity costumes or, you know, remembering packed lunch for school trips. So a lot of the kind of mental load side of family life, I suppose. And I work in a department that has a lot of good female role models. So I've always, and a lot of less than full-time workers as well. So that's never felt difficult. And, you know, I feel like that's accepted where I work. So I feel very grateful for that. In terms of my own sort of well-being, I suppose you're asking about. So I think, particularly when you're a mum of young children, it tends to be the thing that gets left off the list and not really attended to properly. So, I mean, I try as much as possible to look after my mental and physical health. So for me, it's actually swimming and singing are my things. So I tried really hard to protect my time for those. I should also say that my husband, you know, he shares you know, we're a partnership, we've always approached it like that. He shares the childcare and all those other list of family jobs I was talking about, and we both try really hard to protect each other's sort of well-being time. But
what about childcare?
Yeah, so that is a challenge. So it definitely takes a village to raise a child. I have, do you want the detail, nitty-gritty? So I used nursery when my children were small. They had extended hours. It's very expensive. Took a big chunk of my salary, but I wanted to have to not be able, not worry about it. And it felt really sort of tough at the time financially, but I'm really glad I did that, because it meant I could go to work and not worry about them and not have this sort of patchwork that I was constantly trying to juggle. Since I've been at school, I've again pay money for someone to pick them up, bring them home, and again that's just to allow flexibility so I can be a bit late, and that's okay. I'm really aware of my privilege, so I am able to live close to where I work, I can cycle to work, so I can get home in an emergency. the specialty I do, I don't have to do a lot of, it's not a craft specialty. I don't have to do out of hours lists and things. So it fits really well with having a family. And like I said, my colleagues are brilliant. So there are people who will cover at short notice if needed.
What about things like going to conferences?
So I try really hard to do them in the week and book study leave and not worry about it because
it's stay the night,
pay for childcare. So that involves forward planning and husband being at home. Pre-pandemic, when they were smaller, I did my. We have got healthy grandparents that contributed a lot, but I think there was just something about COVID that separated everyone out, and we sort of learned how to manage with other people, friends, and developed relationships with people who could come and look after the kids. So I don't feel I have to put that burden on my parents as much as I used to. And when they come, it's for fun, which is actually really nice.
Okay, that sounds very nice. As a recent grandparent, I'm one of the people that gets called on, maybe sometimes a little too often, but actually it is nice to have.
I mean, in the early years, they were just my mum actually lives in Scotland, but it was cheaper for her to get the train to London to help me look after my child with chickenpox than to pay for extra childcare. So with those kind of situations, they're so stressful, but you look back and you just manage somehow. You
just
find a way. Yeah. Yeah.
So we were talking about it before we started recording that quite a lot of younger consultants, trainee doctors, people generally working in the health service are feeling as if they haven't got much more to give and feeling quite burnt out. Do you have any advice that you would give them? Is there anything that you would say to them that might support them through what sometimes feels like a very difficult time at the moment?
Well, I do think that being a doctor is a brilliant job. And I think it's about finding the thing, in your day that sparks that joy and trying to do as much of it as possible. I think in terms of the work context, I do think we need to be really, really conscious that we're under an enormous amount of pressure, and our mental health is really fragile, I think, at the moment in the health service. I mean, we've essentially been through a sort of mass trauma event with the pandemic, and I think the ripples of that will be there for quite a long time to come. I mean, I didn't really have my moment of, oh my gosh, what's just happened, till a couple of years really through. And it really hit me out of the blue quite unexpectedly. And I had to really step back and much more consciously look after my physical and mental health for a couple of months. And I didn't see that coming at all. And I 100% think it was related to everything that happened during COVID. So I don't think we should be too hard on ourselves, actually. I think we've been through, hopefully, a once-in-a-generation event that has had a massive impact on healthcare professionals. So, yeah, do the thing. Try and do more of the things you enjoy. Do not compromise the things that keep you well. And I would encourage you to push yourself a little bit to try new things, actually. I think, like I said, those different things I'm doing outside of work, although they take a bit more time, they're actually making me enjoy my job overall more, which sounds a bit paradoxical, but just because you're feeling a bit flat and overwhelmed, don't rule out opportunities that come your way. They might actually, in a strange sort of way, be a solution to how you're feeling.
Okay, Ruth, thank you very much for talking to me.
You've been listening to Medical Women Talking with me, Jane Dacre. If you wish to hear more conversations with medical women, then check out the other seasons of this podcast series. And thank you for listening.